World History Channel. My name is Ron Partain, and it is Tuesday night, everybody's favorite night, because we get to talk to Mr. Mike King, who is like becoming a rock star, if I understand it correctly. You know, it's funny. I think I was telling you about the Twitter space that I was in last Tuesday night. And, you know, there's so many people that are really hungry for this information. Are you noticing that too? Are you getting that?
Yeah, I think things have gotten so bad with regards to the whole Trump movement and all the forces and the propaganda arrayed against them. Mm-hmm. You know, at a certain point, people, you put two and two together, they have to begin to infer, you know, what else have we been lied to about? So they're more open to it. So I think all the filth that they've slung at Donald Trump has done a lot to prepare the public mind for deeper truths.
I agree with that. But I think it's not just Trump, but it's like everything. I think people are coming to the realization that literally everything they've ever known is now basically a lie. Yeah. And it's like, where do you start? Where do you even like get a foundation to start with? You know, and for, you know, not to, you know, push your book or nothing, but you know, the 9/11 or the you know, the NWO book that you did, the, you know, the Crash Course, that's a great place to start for people.
Great starter.
It's a great
this one starter. You can get on Amazon. It'll help me jump up the rankings. Crash Course NWO, Mike S. King, because you can read it in 1 hour.
And what that does is that just,
you know, something like this now, there's no question. I've noticed a difference just in the last few years as far as people on our side of the fence, not in Libertardia and not so much in Normiedom, but mainstream conservatism, Fox News type people, those types of people now are moving, for lack of a better phrase, to the far right. Mm. So that's good.
Yeah, it's I'm seeing a lot of people come to the right, and you know, I was listening to Jim Willie. I had him on, and he was talking about how he feels like Trump is basically going to run almost unopposed, and he quantified that by saying, you know, and like with maybe about 6 to 8 weeks before the election, that it will basically be over, that there's no, that there's not going to be any, you know, pushback from the left on this. There's not going to be anybody to push back. So, and I mean, what, and the policies that they're going to defend, it's like, you know, and you know, that kind of ties into what we're talking about tonight with, you know, with Putin, because, you know, the moment that we're having in the United States right now, the Russians already had it.
Yeah, Putin was pretty much the dress rehearsal, and that was critical, because if the Eurasian giant fell, there'd be no recovery for Europe and the whole Eurasian landmass. You know, I don't know which way the United States would have went, but certainly the world would have been in a very dark place.
Very dark place. Yeah.
So his story is quite remarkable. And it's really a parallel to what we're going through with the Q operation. Mm-hmm. Russia already went through that, you know, perhaps not in this sort of secretive sense, but in terms of the struggle that took place between their good guys and bad guys, and now they finally gained the upper hand. It's definitely a parallel in so many ways. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, you know, and I don't think, you know, I think last week what I did talk about the, did we talk about kind of like the overarching picture of how Russia got to where they are? I mean, I think we talked about how Afghanistan was a ploy.
Yeah.
And that was a Brzezinski thing where they were trying to get the Russians to come in and do that. And the whole point was to break down Russia. And then the Warsaw Pact, which was the Russian NATO, if you will, that broke down. And then those countries slowly, even though the United States and NATO agreed that they would never, you know, go eastwards, all those countries began to come into NATO. So, which, you know, basically just pissing Russia off, because Russia couldn't do anything to stop it. They were weak. Correct?
Well, that's right. They were broke. They were destitute. It was maybe not quite as bad as a Weimar Republic Germany,
right?
But certainly very, very bad, worse than we can imagine. Not just economically, you know, political corruption, moral degradation, a total collapse, really, really bad shape. And I think we left off at the end of the Yeltsin regime. He only had 2% of the country approved of him.
Mm-hmm.
But he did one thing right. He essentially anointed Putin to be his successor. And that would have been New Year's Eve going into the new millennium. So when Putin walks into the situation, it's very analogous to Hitler in 1933. He's got an absolute mess on his hands, politically, economically, culturally, morally, geopolitically.
Yep.
And he's not powerful either. Just like Hitler in his first term or his first few months, or Trump in his first term, you have all these political forces arrayed against you. So he's not in a position to just wave his hand and make all the bad guys go away. So he begins. And again, we go to these parallels with Trump. He actually has to sort of embrace these oligarchs who are raping the country and come to an understanding with them. Okay, you guys basically support the government. I'll let you do what you do.
Right.
But all along, he was planning to take them out and take them down. So that's a situation you had. You had, everything. Inflation, hunger, declining birth rates. People couldn't afford food. Heating shortages in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
It was a horrible condition. And Russia was being raped. And it was an inside-outside job. From the outside, you had the Harvard boys, Council on Foreign Relations, went over there. They're embedded in the Russian government, and they were given advice. This is how you got to privatize. And they sold off all these vast state-run enterprises for pennies on the dollar to these Jewish oligarchs. And the oligarchs were mainly Jewish, and then the pressure from the West, those were Jewish globalist quarters.
Right.
So it was like a redo of what the Bolsheviks had done, only this time in a capitalistic sense.
It's interesting that you say that, because we were talking just before we went live, and I was mentioning to you that article or the book review of, it was like basically talking about Operation Barbarossa and who was really responsible for the war between Russia and Germany. And basically, all of this revisionist historian from Russia really put all this stuff together, and one of the chapters or one of those things in there that he talked about, or the guy that was doing the review of the book, I think he was American, but he said basically that the people in Russia were actually worse off under a capitalist system than they were under a communist system, and at least at that point, Marx had been proven correct that unbridled capitalism or unrestrained capitalism is actually worse than communism, because all of the people that were at the high positions within the government, or business or whatever, they were the same people who were at high positions in the Soviet government. So when everything collapsed, they were the ones that came in and filled the shoes of the void that had been created once the government collapsed. But now they don't have to take care of any people. So the people that were the ones that suffered the most. And, you know, then that kind of lays the foundation for Putin to come on the scene.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it was criminality, really. I mean, I I wouldn't agree with that thesis that it's the, you know, Marx predicted that inevitably capitalism was implode, but it depends what you want to call capitalism.
Right.
I mean, if you're talking about free enterprise, free competition, and everybody's got an equal shot, and you have an honest currency, and the government's not choosing sides, that's free enterprise. And that's right. going to be a good thing. It's going to create abundance right. for everybody. The straw man of Marx that he calls capitalism is just a bunch of gangsters, you know, taking over and doing whatever they want,
right.
in collusion with a criminal government and a corrupt monetary system. So that's like unfortunate because, yes, a lot of the Russian people at that point were like, communism is better. We need to go back.
Right, exactly.
But they never got a taste of a true market economy under Yeltsin. They were it was criminality. It wasn't any kind of economic system. They call it capitalism.
Capitalism in our country right now. We don't have a free market capitalism. Yeah. We essentially have a very soft fascism in this country.
Yeah.
So. But anyway, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I mean, I'm just saying
that's what Putin walked into, and that's the economic issue and the corruption issue that he had to tackle. It was very entrenched. It was very vast. Simply not the sort of thing you could just come in day one and clean house, because he's nobody. He hasn't consolidated that kind of power. He actually had to sit down and meet with people like Khodorkovsky and listen to her advice. Later on, he said, after I ate enough dirt from that man, I was able to deal with him. He ended up in prison. But in the beginning, what could you do? Very similar to how when Trump came into power, and Klaus Schwab, great guy. Oh, Bibi Netanyahu, love him.
Right.
That's how you had to play the game. And that's how Putin played it. But in addition to the political corruption, the economic rape that's going on, the country is being subverted from within by the NGOs, the non-governmental organizations, the tax-exempt foundations, all from the West, the Soros groups, human rights, democracy. They got all these high-sounding names, and they're going in there with Soros money, CIA money, and they're cultivating their own legions of traitors within Russia.
Mm-hmm.
And to this day, Putin refers to them as the fifth column of scum and traitors. And they could turn out like a demonstration, a rent-a-mob to destabilize the government. And they funded political parties. So he's not – the government itself, the Russian government itself, is no longer able to run itself because its constitution – was actually rewritten with the advice of these Harvard experts. So that's how bad it was. So it's almost like they're under foreign occupation, literally. Okay? You know,
yeah,
in the front, you see government, elected officials, a president, but they've actually almost been colonized and subservient to the Western powers.
It's interesting that you say that. I had never really considered that, but you know what? Now that you say it, and the way that you say it, it actually makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
From the standpoint that we colonized them, and that makes a lot of sense. Really, it does.
Yeah, that was a big problem because now it's not just a matter of. You know, let's get rid of this foreign influence on the inside.
Mm-hmm.
Just legions of libtards had been cultivated and criminals and crooks and their own party and the Duma and Russian academia. And a lot of this was going on during the Cold War. This was being cultivated. Okay.
Right.
With the collapse of the Soviet Union, it went into overdrive. So he's got a massive fifth column. That's what they refer to. That term comes from the Spanish Civil War. There was a general saying, I've got four columns marching on Madrid and then a fifth one in the city, meaning that they'll rise up when they arrive.
I wonder where the origin of that phrase was. Okay, yeah. That makes a lot of that. That makes sense.
So it means that a foreign entity has a base of power within you. That can rise up.
Gotcha.
Okay, so internal traitors. essentially, is how it's referred to in this context. So you hear that a lot over the years in Russian politics. They were talking about the fifth column, what were they talking about? They're talking about, you know, the Zelensky types. I mean, I know that's Ukraine, Zelensky, and what's the name of those brothers? They were professional boxers, you know, those guys.
Zelenko or something like that.
Whatever. Those types of characters. Right. Russia was full of them. And Putin's got to deal with them, too. They're in the Duma. They're in the Russian Central Bank.
And Russian academia. If you guys who don't know what the Duma is basically like the parliament or the House of Representatives or whatever. So
that's something else he's got to contend with. Okay, so and of course, as this is happening, you have all of the NATO countries. Not only did the Warsaw Pact disbanded, not only did NATO stay in effect. We were told NATO was there to counteract the Soviet Union and the Warsaw Pact, a balance to protect Europe. Well, now they're gone. Soviet Union's gone. Warsaw Pact is gone. Why did NATO fade away? Not only did it not fade away, it's eventually swallowed up all these countries and even some former Soviet republics, such as Lithuania, Estonia, Latvia that became independent.
Right.
So, there's no question now. Russia is being encircled. They're still being subverted from within. The situation, when you look at it in retrospect, you know, it looks helpless. And by the time Bush the second went into Iraq in 2003, Putin couldn't say anything. Russia's too weak. When they went into Serbia under Clinton, Russia didn't do a thing. They couldn't. You know, their stuff was outdated. You know, it's a miracle how what remained of the Soviet Union or Russia itself didn't just disintegrate and fall apart. Mm-hmm. So, what Putin does is slowly but surely begins to bring the country back with economic reforms, cleaning up some of the corruption, but he proceeds slowly and methodically. And again, like Trump, the whole time he's doing this, he keeps talking about our Western partners, and he meets with Bush, and he meets with Merkel. He knows what these people are. But, you know, he doesn't come at them overtly like he is now. Now he talks about the satanic West, okay, and the scum and traitors within Russia. I mean, his rhetoric now is beautiful. It's positively Hitlerian. But 20 years ago, he couldn't talk like that. He couldn't act like that. So even in the foreign sphere, he's rubbing elbows with these people. He's meeting with Kissinger and Klaus Schwab and these kind of characters. That's how you play the game. But slowly but surely, Russia's coming back, stabilize the economy. He's originally an economist by trade. You know, they made some market reforms. They start to grow. You know, I would say by, you know, 05, 06, they're no longer on their ass starving. Things are a lot better. There's stabilization, okay? The war continues. I think the next big overt offensive against Russia, and it may even have been an attempt to start the war, was in 2008 when there was a puppet in Georgia named Shakashvili.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, Council on Foreign Relations. I mean, these guys are a dime a dozen. You go the our foreign policy boys, our CRA, CFR, NGOs, they go into these countries. It's like taking the shit on the sidewalk. The flies will come to you. And that's how it is with the Yankee dollar and the Yankee power. So these guys are a dime a dozen. They put him in power, so he was the puppet. And he starts provoking just like Ukraine. There's these two little Russian-speaking republics, and he's bullying them, invades them. Finally, Russia has to act. And search through your memory banks, you'll recall that big crisis in 2008. They launched it right during the Olympics. They did that on purpose. Bush did that.
That's right. And what were the Olympics? Was it the Winter Olympics?
I believe it was the Summer Olympics in China.
In China?
That might have been the year of Beijing. Beijing.
Beijing was 2008. That's right.
And it's said that Putin would have had the ceremony with Bush at the Olympic ceremony, and he got word of what happened, and he gave him like a dirty look. He says, "You little motherfucker." He knew. So they were probing. I don't know if they were probing or testing, see what they could get away with, or maybe Cheney wanted to start a war, figuring, let's get Russia now, even though they're getting back on their feet. They're not up. We could still take them easily. I don't know what their intention was. But Putin made his move. He made a strong move. He went in to these two republics, tiny Russian enclaves, Abkhazia or something like that. I forget the names of the two.
Georgia.
Abkhazia and Ossetia.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, they weren't republic nations. They were just kind of little provincial enclaves. And Georgia claimed they're part of Georgia. So he went in, he put an end to that, and the media starts screaming, he's picking on little Georgia. They're going to go into Georgia. Never even went into Georgia proper. Just a little bit, pushed them out. He could have took the whole Georgia government down. But that was that with Georgia. That government was imposed upon the Georgian people by something called the Rose Revolution. It was one of the early color revolutions. You know, spontaneous uprising. Because that's when the CIA and the Soros, they'd put their money, they'd cultivate a rent-a-mob, destabilize a country, overthrow a government, and that's what they did in Georgia, just like they did in Ukraine years later.
Yeah, and for clarity, guys, so that you understand exactly where Georgia is on the map, because I know a lot of people, you know, they say Georgia and you think it's like the state of Georgia. No, it's Georgia's right here.
We don't want to rile up the good old boys here.
Yeah. Georgia's right here, so you can see it's actually touching Russia, and of course this is the border here, and then Ukraine's right here. So, you know, you see the proximity of where all this stuff was going on, and of course you've got Grozny and Chechnya. So
that was all deep state.
Yeah. So
you know So they had all these little separatist movements, Islamic terror, all of it. Just think of ISIS or Al-Qaeda, same template, operating within the frontiers of Russia. So that's kind of stuff goes on. But that was Putin's first strong move against the West. It was in Georgia.
In 2008.
So it took him like 8 years to begin to push back, but now he's feeling his oats a little bit. During this time, he's made an alliance with China. So it's clear by this time now, Russia's getting stronger. They're coming back. They're not going to take the globalist bullshit anymore. They still got to proceed cautiously, though. It's still a process, but they're getting on their feet. And this was the great fear of Zbigniew Brzezinski when he wrote The Grand Chessboard in 1998. Okay. At a time when Russia was on its ass, he's talking about we've got to take control of Central Asia because if Russia recovers, China gets strong, they'll be the dominant force over there. He said that. And then he further added, unfortunately, American people, you know, they're not going to support something like this unless there's another Pearl Harbor.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, that exactly.
That's what that's about. This feeds right into this.
Right. Can I ask you a question? You didn't mention anything about the 99 apartment bombings, apartment building bombings. Because there are some who think that was basically a Russian false flag that was perpetrated by the government, by Russia, but as a mechanism to be able to do the things that they wanted to do to get rid of all these oligarchs.
Yeah, there's no way Putin would do such a thing, kill his own people. This is actually, to me, just a way to project and shift, because this is typical deep state behavior, destabilizing behavior. So either the deep state did it, or maybe for all we know, I don't know, maybe they did like a Sandy Hook type thing.
Yeah, there's some pretty compelling evidence.
Yeah, to kill all those innocent people, no, there's no way.
I'm just saying there's some pretty compelling evidence that Putin kind of maybe knew what was coming there, and that was FSB done. But again, you know, I don't, I can't say for an absolute fact that is the case. And I, like you, I question whether or not he would, you know, harm his own people. But at the same time, you know, they look at life, you know, I find that people in Asia and in Eastern Europe, they look at life differently than we do in the West, specifically in the United States. They have a completely different philosophy about life. Not saying that it's bad. It's just, it's just the reality. But anyway, I just was curious if, you know, if you had any,
I don't believe that. To me, that's like the false charge that Hitler burned the Reichstag down.
Okay. All right.
I mean, this is what they do. This is what deep state, they kill people, they mass murder people. Right. So it's right up their alley to then turn around and say, oh, Putin did that, you know? So, because what they hope to do with these terrorist attacks within Russia, against Russia, is kind of destabilize the country. But you know, the way Putin handled it, it backfired on them. But just because it backfired, you know, that in no way constitutes any evidence that, you know, he did it. We know what the deep state is. Then there was another incident. It was a massive school kidnapping and shooting incident.
Yes.
But these are like ISIS type groups. We saw what they did in Syria with the mass murder, the rape, the killing, the kidnapping of women, keeping them in sex slaves. And this is what their CIA proxy armies do. So it's par for the course for them. But in time they dealt with that. Fighting in Chechnya was ferocious. Ultimately, they put that down. That was a phony separatist movement. It was a deep state separatism. And when that was put down, there were a lot of people in Chechnya grateful for that. And he has very strong support in Chechnya. So this was something that was done over the years. There were so many ethnicities once you get outside of Russia proper. It's very easy to start inciting, you know, because you're a different religion, a different ethnicity, turn them against Russia. But that's how the deep state operated. You know, at that point, it's just a gradual, he's getting stronger and the Russian economy is getting stronger. The Russian military is being rebuilt. But most importantly, Putin himself domestically is getting stronger and he's building alliances. He's going after a lot of these oligarchs. Some of the worst ones were put in prison. Eventually, that's where Khodorkovsky ended up. Mm-hmm. And it's funny. There's like when Putin went in there, Khodorkovsky used to just walk into his office like he owned the place. And Putin just like, okay. And then later on, Putin said, you know, I took enough dirt from that man. He locked him up. Remember Pussy Riot, those women who were arrested?
Oh, yeah. I remember that very well.
Going into the Cathedral of Christ the Savior.
Yep.
Singing filthy lyrics. Shit, Putin, your shit. Kirill is like their pope, but he's Russian Orthodox Church. So they got a prison sentence for that. And then the West portrayed them, the fake news media. You remember, these poor little girls put them in jail. They had been warned repeatedly not to do this stuff, and they kept pushing and pushing. So there's all this propaganda against Putin, and he's having to deal. He's having to deal with that.
You don't remember that this is the Pussy Riot. Where is it? There's the Pussy Riot thing right there. This is the one from the Cathedral.
Yeah, that's the Christ the Savior Cathedral. In Moscow, and they're going in there singing filthy lyrics, and in the background they have guys that set up with like loudspeakers and electric guitars, putting this awful noise in there. You know, people are in there praying, and they're coming with this stuff, and they sing, you know, Patriarch Kirill, your shit. And they got other songs that, you know, Russian housewives, you need to use your vacuum cleaner hoses as dildos and stuff. Just vile.
Okay. Is gross, is absolutely despicable.
But they don't tell you that in the fake news. No. They come on the
narrative.
They come on the Charlie Rose show, and Hillary Clinton met with them. I think Merkel met with them. So disgusting. They made martyrs out of these poor little activist girls. But it was all deep state, all hooked up with the NGOs. But again, slowly but surely, they're cleaning up these NGOs. They're passing laws against the foreign interference, putting people in jail. So it's a gradual process. I mean, you know, people are losing patience with this 8-year Q plan. You know, well, Putin did this over 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
So by this time, they're introducing morality education in the Russian schools, cleaning up some of the filth from their airwaves, continuing to rebuild their economy, forging alliances, both economic and militarily, with other countries. So it's just getting stronger and stronger and stronger, and his position gets stronger and stronger. So he's waiting out his Western globalist friends. And, of course, the whole time he's doing this, he's trying to at least keep the facade of a good relationship with these characters. First right. Bush, then Obama. But he knows what they are, but you got to play the game. And so, okay, so that's the anti-Putin propaganda blitz. Now, this builds up now to 2014. What happened in 2014? There was an election.
Yep. In Ukraine.
Right. And the one candidate was, they say pro-Russian, Yushchenko, Lukashenko, something like that. Not Lukashenko. These names are hard to stick in the head, you know. But it was pro-Russian.
I think it's Yushchenko.
Yeah, Yushchenko, yeah.
Yushchenko, the Orange Revolution, Yushchenko presidency. Maybe it's Petro Poroshenko.
Well, the first one was the Orange Revolution. That was years earlier. We put a puppet in there. Then this guy gets in there, who's pro-Russian. This is 2014. In the east of Ukraine, he just like dominated. But even in the central and the west, he got some votes. He's elected president. He's not hostile to the West in any way, but he feels European Union's not for us. And we certainly don't want anything to do with NATO. His word was, we're a perfect bridge for East to West. So he wants good economic, diplomatic relations with the West, as well mm-hmm. as with Russia. But he announced early on, he's putting the kibosh on the process which would have led to integration into the European Union. And at this point, what happens? Flick the switch. Remember those rent-a-mobs I tell you about? Mm-hmm. Spontaneous crowds come out of nowhere. Soros, the NGOs, the fifth column, that gets activated. And if you could play the John McCain video clip.
Okay.
John McCain, that evil, diabolical traitor that Trump had executed. Yes, he did.
Yes, he did.
Went to Kiev, and you're going to see him here. What is he doing in Kiev? He's an American senator. And they had a democratic election. Don't we believe in democracy? Right. Evidently not. It doesn't go our way. But we could not tolerate a government that was not going to integrate into the European Union. Do you have it up?
Yeah.
That's right. Go. Let's hear this. Let's hear.
Prevent Ukraine. People of Ukraine, this is your moment.
Народе український, це ваш момент.
This is about you, no one else.
Це про вас.
This is about the future you want for your country. This is about the future you deserve.
Це про ваше майбутнє, про майбутнє вашої країни. Це про майбутнє, на яке ви заслуговуєте.
A future in Europe.
Майбутнє Європи.
A future of peace.
Майбутнє миру.
With all of your neighbors.
Майбутнє всіх ваших сусідів.
The free world is with you. America is with you. I am with you. And the destiny you seek lies in Europe.
І ваша доля як ми вважаємо, знаходиться в об'єднаній Європі.
Ukraine will make Europe better and Europe will make Ukraine better.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
I wish we could dig them up and shoot them again.
I know. And that's not even including the one that he had where he that's not even including the when he went to met with ISIS.
That's a whole other story. Yeah, right. Exactly. Because simultaneous to this, we'll get into that's coming later. Russia is trying to save Syria. And that's all on the agenda. So there he is inciting the overthrow of a Democratic elected government, the insurrection, what they falsely accused Trump of on January 6th. There's John McStain. His little girlfriend, Lindsey Graham, was there too. There were a couple other U.S. senators and diplomats, Victoria Nuland. And he said it right there. Your future's with Europe. You've got to get rid of this government and join the new world order. That's the real message there. And what happens is days later, the next clip, if you could play that one.
Okay, so you sent me one from today, and then there was one from last week that I didn't play. So I'm going to play the one that you sent me from today. Well,
forget last week. I got this one in order. Yeah, so the next soon after that, they packed up and fled the democratically elected government. That's democracy in action.
Mm-hmm. Somebody said that they heard that Ukraine was the center of all the Satan worshiping. I'm not really familiar with that. I think I think that probably falls more under the Kazakhstan Nur-Sultan area, but certainly there's an element of it, at least from, I think, the Western control of certain areas within Ukraine. That certainly was
interesting. They have a trident on their fake flag, that's interesting true. Symbol.
Good
and
point.
As far as human trafficking and child sex, it's definitely a hub for that. A lot of dirty stuff went on in Ukraine at the bio labs, and they got their own oligarchs. But that's how the government fell.
Right.
And you got a pro-Western puppet, pro-EU, pro-NATO government. That's how it happened. And the spin of the Western fake news, this was so disgusting. It's actually what prompted me to write the book, The War Against Putin. I wrote that in 2014. And then I updated it years later. But the spin was it was a corrupt regime. It was tyrannical. The people had to rise up.
I did this kind of on my own, but just in this, maybe thought that you might want to play some of this.
Yeah.
But I actually downloaded the copy of the recording of Victoria Nuland talking to that guy who you sent me the picture of, where it talks about how they're trying to organize the government after this coup.
Yeah.
Oh, if you want me to play any of that, let me know. But
well, Victoria Nuland, let me set this up. It's Noodleman. She's the wife of Robert Kagan. PNAC 9/11 cover upper.
Yes.
And she was expected to be, a lot of people speculated that she was going to be the Secretary of State under Hillary Clinton. There she is. She's giving out cookies and treats to the thugs of Ukraine. How special. Okay, isn't that special? When the government was overthrown violently. So that's Vicky Nuland. I think her official title was Under Secretary of State for Eurasian Affairs or something like that. And there's her puppets. There's that boxer behind her. I forget these guys' names. They're all puppets. They're all corrupt. They're all criminals. And she's the boss. The Yenta, telling them what to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-mm. And again, just for emphasis, her husband is the guy who wrote the PNAC document, which is talked about outside of a catalyzing event like a new Pearl Harbor. We will not be able to achieve basically our geopolitical aims in Central Asia without that. So her husband is the one who wrote that as a neocon or a Republican.
Yeah.
And she's like hardcore lefty, but which they're not.
Right.
their belief system is the same.
Yeah.
So
that's how this current regime came into power, and they banned any parties that were pro-Russian, and then they started their shit with the Russian majority in the East wanted nothing to do with it. They started provoking them. They made a move to ban Russia. It used to be a bilingual country. And Ukraine is really just a dialect of Russian. Now, Crimea, the Crimean Peninsula, which is Russian, 99% Russia, they said, we don't want none of this. We don't want to be in the EU. We don't want to be in NATO. We don't want our naval base to go to NATO. We don't want intermediate missiles on our soil pointing at our brothers in Moscow.
Right.
Crimea begged for the Russian takeover. Very similar to how the Sudetenland wanted Hitler to absorb them. Same thing.
That's right.
Right? Mm-hmm. So that's what the situation in Crimea, and you remember that big fake controversy.
Very well.
Putin stole Crimea. Oh,
yeah. Crimea's they Russian voted like 95% to go to, I mean, the Crimean Peninsula voted 99 or 95% to go with Russia. Basically the same thing as the eastern provinces of Ukraine right now, which was, you know, Donetsk and I forget all the, you know, with the Luhansk, some of those, all those provinces, those were the ones that were heavily voting pro Poroshenko back in 2014 when he literally won genuinely.
Yeah. Right. So that's some very important context that the fake news leaves out. Okay. Russia did not steal or conquer eastern provinces of Ukraine or Crimea. To the contrary, the villain, the bully, was the Kiev government in Ukraine installed by these globalists. Russia liberated Crimea and these four provinces in the east. But it's a total inversion of reality. They make Putin seem like the aggressor.
Right.
So that's it. And now concurrent with this is the situation in Syria, which that dates back to the same time period. This was a major program of the globalists and the Zionists. Hmm. We got to get rid of Assad. We got Saddam. They got Gaddafi. They were able to pull that off while Russia was still weak. Now this was Russia's line in the sand. Putin says you will not take Syria. They would have went to war over that. And Hillary and Noodleman were talking about the no-fly zones, which means we're going to shoot down Russian planes. Mm-hmm. So, and then you have ISIS. What is ISIS? ISIS is a mercenary army, CIA, Mossad, just like the Chechen rebels.
Correct.
You know, whenever you see these spontaneous rebels pop up and they're targeting a government that is on the globalist or Zionist hit list, it's all fake. ISIS was a mercenary army.
Exactly correct.
And this is when the tide really began to turn, I would say, with the victory in Crimea and then the successful saving of Syria. And it is Putin that did that, but we got to give a big assist to Donald J. Trump.
That's right. Amen.
2017, early on, I'll show you the headline. This Washington Post, New York Times, this is open news. Trump terminates CIA program funding the moderate rebels. Ain't no moderate rebels. It's all one. It's like Putin said, how do you all distinguish between a moderate rebel and an immoderate rebel in Syria? It's all ISIS. ISIS is CIA Mossad. And that's a fact. They're funded by CIA. So Trump cut off their official funding and also their unofficial funding. CIA, ISIS began to wither up and die.
There you go, okay? Right here. Trump ends covert CIA program to arm anti-Assad rebels in Syria, a move sought by Moscow. And this is from July 19th. They spin it like he's Putin's
puppet. No, right. Putin and Trump. And the irony is, you know, they accuse Trump of colluding with Putin. In actuality, they're right about that. He has been all along, back channel communications, but they're colluding for the good.
Correct.
And that's how ISIS ended. That's how Syria was saved. Syria's rebuilding. They're getting recognized. It's over. The Zionist expansion project, the globalist expansion project, it's over because of Putin and Trump. But before Trump came on the scene, just like we reviewed today, it was Putin kept us in the game until the cavalry arrived. And now with Putin and Trump won at the same time, you know.
Going back, because there was a short period of time, I want to say it was like 4 years, when Putin, it was either 2 or 4 years when Putin was kind of, he was in the background. He wasn't the president. He was the president in Russia for like, I think he got 2 terms, and then he backed off, and then he ran again.
Then he was prime minister.
He was prime minister. Okay. Cause I couldn't remember exactly whose titles were what, but then he became the Russian president again. And then, wasn't it in like 2018 or 2019 when Dmitry Medvedev like resigned, and then the entire government resigned?
Yeah. Well, they had to abide by this cockamamie constitution that was imposed upon them by the globalists. Mm. So he couldn't serve all these concurrent terms. So he was president 2 terms. Then he became prime minister, probably their equivalent of house speaker, but he was the power behind the throne while Medvedev served as president. And then he comes back as president. And if I'm not mistaken, I think they changed the law. So he could stay on as president.
That's what they did. Yeah, they changed the law. And that was, I think that was one of the reasons why the government resigned, was because that was part of the changing the law process.
Yeah.
But I don't remember, especially
with the so-called invasion of Ukraine 2 years ago, this was the final consolidation, because he smoked out the remaining traitors in Russia, who right away said, oh, we're against the war. And they miscalculated badly, because the war is extremely popular with the Russian people, as is Putin, because they understand now. They've been red-pilled by now. Okay, they see what the West is about.
Mm-hmm.
So these people miscalculated. I mean, 10, 15 years ago, to come out against your country, it's one thing, but to do that now, they outed themselves as traitors, and then Putin pounced on that He said right on national TV, he says, the Russian people will always be able to recognize scum and traitors, his words, within our midst, and we will spit them out. They start flying in droves. Where do they go? Israel. Surprise, surprise. Dubai. A lot of them end up at Dubai or Britain. Mm-hmm. And now there's a lot of lower level professional type, a lot of them Jewish, who are leaving because they're libtards. They don't feel comfortable there. So it's almost like what started happening in Germany in 1933. Mm-hmm. People like Einstein and Marlene Dietrich and the Frankfurt School and the Magnus Hirschfeld, these communists and perverts, they were not expelled from Germany.
No, they left willingly.
They just saw the writing on the wall and they said, we can't live in a country like this. You know, a country that's stable, prosperous, moral, oh, horrors. And that's what's happening in Russia now. You can see the headlines. The rats are leaving the ship. It's a beautiful thing. And Putin pulled it off over a 20-year period, more than 20 years, 24 years. And a big part of the program was the old adage, keep your friends close, keep your enemies closer.
Right.
So now he doesn't have to play their game no more. He comes right out, calls people scum, traitors, the Western elites are Satanists. The stuff he says, he's unplugged, he's unchained, much like Trump is too, if you read his true social posts. So
there was a, you know, I've played this on my channel before, and I don't think I'm going to play it tonight, but there's a couple of songs out there that, you know, the patriotic movement, the nationalistic movement within Russia is extraordinarily strong, especially with the young generation. They are extremely patriotic and they love Russia. It's you know, it's when I watched there's this young kid who sings a song, and then there was like an older kind of a probably a pop singer from yesteryear, you know, maybe from like the 90s or whatever, who kind of stayed popular anyway. Yeah. He's probably in his mid to late 40s. But you know, he had a really popular song that was very, you know, it was about Russia, you know, very, you know, and you watch these things, you know, you watch the videos of them, and man, it's like, I don't know about you, but I tear up when I see stuff like that, because I want that for us, you know, I want that for the United States. Well, and it's
a whole generation now has been raised. These are Putin's kids
who
from the age of 5, 6, 7, they were taught morality in school, patriotism. So and now it's bearing fruit. These are young people in their late teens, early 20s, entering the professions. They're starting to have babies again in Russia. They're almost stable. If you could pull up one of those videos I think you're talking about, I think it's titled Rossiya Mama, R-O-S-I-Y-A.
R-O-S-I-Y-A.
Rossiya Mama, M-O-M-A. Should be close enough. It's a song.
Okay, I haven't seen this yet.
Did you find it?
I did. Let me see here.
It's beautiful. It's militaristic. It's patriotic. It's religious.
Let me go ahead and I will. I'm going to stop this because I need to present it with the audio.
The only thing that's a little unfortunate, but understandable, it's heavy on the World War II symbolism, the Great Patriotic War. You know, that's so embedded in your culture that it's going to be hard to get that out. So
let me, let me know if there's an echo in here, because I'm playing this a little bit different. So if there's an echo, let me know.
Is this the video or the song? It should be a young girl's.
It's both.
Okay.
I think.
Yeah, there it is.
Oh, Мама, Россия, мама, любви и без обмана. Мама, Россия, мама, на молитву встанем рано. Мама, Россия, мама, а любви до океана. Мама, Россия, мама, любви и без обмана.
I'm gonna pause it there just because our time's getting a little bit short, but that's actually really good. I'm gonna go back and watch that, finish it up. And there's a couple others that are really good that I've played in the past, and I'll put links to those in the comment section. You know, it's just when you look at the things that are coming out of Russia now. You know, there was an article written by James Perloff back in like 2015-16 time frame, and he said the unthinkable has happened. The United States and Russia have changed places.
Yeah,
and it's true. Yeah,
they're like, you know, America in the 1950s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so funny that you say that. You know, I was doing a gun show one time, and this is probably 2017-18 time frame. And there was, every time you do a gun show, there's always like, you're always next to somebody different, you know, there's like your new neighbors for the weekend. Right. And then you just strike up conversations. You just get to talk to people. Well, this guy actually, he had his son there, and he was an American who was living in Russia, and his son didn't speak any English. He actually was a Russian. He spoke Russian and he taught English in Russia. And he told me, he said, you know, he's like, I love it over there. Because I asked him, I was like, do you like it over there? He says, oh, I love it. It's like America in the 1950s. Those were his words. He said, yeah, he's like, we don't have to lock our houses. It's like, it's, you know, there's no crime. It's like, like, I don't want to say it's utopia, but, you know, that was essentially what he was kind of saying.
Yeah. No, it's a remarkable turnabout. From two decades ago, and it's, you know, much like Germany under Hitler, it's economic. That actually GDP wise, they have a larger economy than Germany now,
right?
Economic revival, the political, the social, the cultural. They don't got to take shit from the globalists anymore. And then the final piece of the puzzle for the world was Trump coming on the scene. So, you know, NATO's gone, European Union, all that's gone. It's never going to rise again. So,
that's a beautiful thing. Yeah. It really is. You know, I mean, I hope it doesn't rise again. You know, I mean, you look back at the course of history, and I mean, these people, they get reined in from time to time, but they always come back.
They do. They are relentless. You go back to the Illuminati when that was broken up, it just reconstituted, you know.
Yeah.
But it seems this time like it's a deep cleaning, like they're really pulling up the roots.
Right.
So
and I just
hope that here in the United States, it's not just going to be a political restructuring and an economic recovery. That's all critical. But Russia made a very concerted, deliberate, thought out effort to repair the moral degradation. And you're seeing the fruits of that now. In a video like that, all those kids talking about got to get up early, got to say my prayers.
That's faith, God, the country, all the pillars that they said that in order to destroy the West, we have to take God out of we have to take God out. We have to destroy the nuclear family, and we have to destroy the patriotism. All three of those things have been reconstituted. Under the direction of Vladimir Putin.
And no queer parades and no queer right. adoptions. They clean that up too.
Right.
So
all that
all gone.
Rot.
Yeah. So that's gonna happen. We'll see.
So, well, man, this is really good stuff. It really is. And you know, I get hope. This to me is gives me hope that, you know what, if it can be done there, it can be done here. If it could be done in Germany, it could be done here. You know, I love right. to say that, you know, we have a historical precedent of how things can turn on a dime for the positive, because if you look at the example of what happened in Germany in 1933 to 1935, when, you know, it took them like 2 years to kind of get on their feet. But in that short time frame, that 4 years from there, by the time World War II broke out, they had the highest standard of living in the world. I mean, they went from being basically destitute, 35% unemployment, you know, suicides just, you know, rampant, to the highest quality of life on the planet in 5 years, you know. And, you know, that's one of the reasons why I kind of look at the things that are happening now from a geopolitical standpoint. That's one of the reasons why I'm so strongly believe in a lot of the digital assets and the cryptos and things like that, because I look at that. We are on the cusp of changing the way the monetary system works, and that removes the control of all these evil fucks, because they're the ones that are controlling the money. And if money is decentralized and it's removed from their control, then we, the people, basically of the world, get liberated. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I actually just did a show on the about the Fed, with a big emphasis on some of the clues, which really aren't even that subtle. They're pretty in your face, that Trump and the Q operation has provided to indicate that the Fed is going to be dealt with.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole corrupt monetary system, probably gold will be back in the mix. So there's very strong indicators of that, if we believe Trump and we believe Q. So, but naturally, that's got to be addressed.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Yeah. You know, you talk about the velocity of money and how quick it is to send money around the world. Well, you heard Trump talking at the when he kind of crashed the Libertarian National Convention, and he was very open about, look, I'm gonna let you keep your Bitcoin, and we're gonna make it here in the United States, and it's gonna be the best, and you know, we're not gonna have a CBDC, and we're gonna I'm gonna cut loose, we're gonna protect the crypto people from the government, and we're gonna make it so that everybody wants to do it here in the country. And but you look at the blockchain technology and how it's going to revolutionize the way business is transacted, where you can send money over across. I mean, it's faster, Mike. I don't know if you know this or not, but if you wanted to send money to India, you could put like $100,000 of cash in a briefcase and fly it to India on a plane and get it there faster than if it went through the SWIFT network. It takes 5 days to transit money across international lines, and the SWIFT system is basically created by the United States, and it's what that's what they use to protect within the banking system. They restrict places like Russia. Oh, we're going to put sanctions on that country. So, and they use the SWIFT system so that you can't use the SWIFT system in those countries, or they have to obey your rules in order for you to put them on their system or on the system so that they can receive money. Yeah. And, you know, that is not a very good thing. And, you know, but you look at what's happened in Russia, and their economy has actually grown as a result of the sanctions. So, you know, it's backfired in a big way. Yeah. So anyway, we're kind of over time, guys, again, just a little bit, not too bad this time, but last week we were like 15 minutes over, but, you know, this is a really cool topic. And I hope you guys, I didn't see any questions in here other than the one that I addressed early, earlier about, Satanism. But anyway, that, that is it. What do you want to talk about next week? Or you want to just like, play it by ear and figure something out?
I think we'll play it by ear. There's a lot going on. I don't know if we'll go, maybe something historical like this, or maybe something current event wise.
Okay. Well, you know, I kind of like the idea of the thing you talked about with the Fed. That might not be a nice segue.
I already got like notes for that and some exhibits. So maybe because the show I did was with, who did I do that show with? I think it was with Dave. Was Trump and Q versus the Fed.
Okay.
But
I like that.
It's a crash course on the history of the Fed and why I believe, or talk about some of these indicators that Trump has got the Federal Reserve in his crosshairs. And that's really exciting.
I think so, yeah. Too. Actually, I think the Fed has already been rolled into the Treasury.
Oh, yeah.
There was an article that came out.
When I say Trump's going to do this or do that, for me, we're talking about what's going to be replayed for the public. You know, all these gangsters are dead already. It's a shame that, you know, McCain's death will be official. But I know he had that son of a bitch whacked. The beautiful thing.
Same thing with G.H.W. Bush. Ugh,
man. Yeah.
I mean, some of these people, you know, yeah. I know we talk about that there's, right. You know, that there's actors out there, and some of these guys, you know, they've been probably executed long ago, or they're incarcerated now, you know, in holding cells or whatever. Yeah. I don't know. But I want to see them executed. Yeah. I want to watch it. I want to see it from with my own eyes. I don't know. I don't know about you, but that's. I have one small question. Not to go in depth, but what happened with the Wagner Group? What was all that with the Wagner Group? The Wagner Group when they were gonna rush, they were gonna march on the Moscow, and then there was like a short period of time where that didn't happen, and then the next thing you know. The Russian army was up in like Belarus or something like that, and then there was and then that guy like died in a plane crash.
Yeah, I don't know. So I don't know too much. I mean, it's just a strange thing. And sometimes you assess something and you don't know what's real and what's play acted, what's drama. It's almost impossible to assess.
Yeah. So I didn't know if you had any insight on that or not.
Yeah, so. That was like really murky, weird.
It was really bizarre, wasn't it? Yeah. I was like, I can't figure this out. You know, at first I thought it was like a fake it was a fake out to allow them to, you know, move militarily. But then after that, when he died, I was like, okay, well, that doesn't really make sense. I don't get that. So anyway, I was looking for your expert geopolitical analysis on that, but you failed me, sir.
Well, I always refrain from commenting on something unless I've really dove deeply into it. You know,
I'm totally
that's a matter of policy.
I'm just teasing you, sir.
Too many people who, for some reason, they feel that they have to have an opinion on something. Mm-hmm. I think the best course, oftentimes, is unless you've achieved mastery on a subject, is not to even express an opinion.
I agree.
But when I say something like about Hitler or Putin, you know, you take that to the bank. And it's funny. No one ever challenges me. Like, they'll say, even on some of these videos, they'll say, oh, he loves Hitler. He's a Nazi. Like, what did I say? What have I said that is mistaken? Right. Anybody? Never.
Prove me wrong, but you know, I will say that I think I mentioned to you that space that I was on. There was almost 800 people in that space, and the recording of it got like over like 10,000 views. So, and you know, do you watch Stu Peters at all? I've never really been a big Stu Peters fan.
Oh, lately he's been outstanding. I mean, I've seen bits and pieces, clips of him. I almost wonder if he's been swapped out. He's so good.
Yeah, he's doing this video coming up in Uncontrolled or something like that, or I don't remember exactly what the name of it is, but it's basically he's like, when I get done playing this movie, there's gonna be no doubt as to what is going on in our country. And to me, it's like, you go, boy. So, but anyway, on that note, Mr. King, thank you for another riveting Tuesday night. And appreciate your time. I see the sun has gone down in your background, so I can't see the trees anymore. It's just dark glass. So we'll let you get to your evening, and we'll see you next Tuesday.
Chewing Trump versus the Fed. I'll be in touch with that one.
Awesome. Okay. Thank you, sir. Have a great night. Okay. Good night, everybody. Good night,